is a recording of the main speaker, Ken D., from La Mesa, California, held at the 15th Annual Delta Intergroup Unity Day in Ripon, California, on Saturday, February 1st, 1992. In observance with the 11th tradition stating anonymity at the public level, please keep this tape within the fellowship and observe the anonymity of all AA speakers. Thank you.
Speaker for tonight, I've heard quite a bit about this gentleman, and like all AA speakers that get around, he knows some of the people that I've gotten to know, and so I'm looking very much forward to hearing him. So without any further ado, I'd like to present Ken D. from La Mesa, California.
Hi, my name is Ken. I'm an alcoholic. They say never follow a child or an animal act. I was watching his wife to be saying, he's not really saying this joke, is he? Did you ever see that look that Wile E. Coyote has when he realizes he's no longer on the mountain? I want to thank everybody connected with the intergroup for inviting me to come up here. It's been a real pleasurable day for me. I like hanging out with people who aren't all there. And you guys are a good cross-section. I love the artwork on the wall because that's what AA is a number of people holding hands, laughing, and nobody knows anything. And when you come to the realization you don't know anything, then they let you talk at the group level. Up until then, they kind of yank you to your seat. I want to thank Cindy and her husband Jim for picking me up at the airport. That was a real nice treat. How it really works, I can tell you how it really works. Jim and I went rushing out of here to get to the hotel after the panel speakers today. And we're about two blocks from here, and he looks at me and he says, "What hotel are you staying in?" I said, "I thought you might have a hint about that, Jim." So we had to make a U-turn out there and come back here and get good old Cindy to tell us. Now, Cindy helped me out tonight because I want to thank Perry and his wife, Charmaine, for being such a good host. And Charmaine was walking by, and I saw her name tag, and I said, how do you pronounce that lady's name? Is it Charmaine? And at that time, Charlene was walking by. She said, "Oh, no, it's Charlene." And I said, "But her name tag says Charmaine." She said, "Oh, they probably spelled it incorrectly." So, I mean, is this AA in action or what? I mean, I always like it when some guy picks you up at the airport and you get out onto a main highway and he says, "Do we go right or left?" And I'm like, I don't know. I thought since you lived here, you may have a clue. It's nice seeing Earl and Polly and all the people I met before. Polly was down in Hawaii when I was down there back in the end of October, I guess the beginning of November, and she was on the beach with these two young guys. And I said, "Polly, you know, you're 33 years sober." I said, "Is this a health risk?" And she said, "Hey, if they die, they die." You know, like... I come from a group where we're not bright. In fact, when you say, "How long are you sober?" in our group, we go like this. So you're not going to hear anything real lightning tonight. In fact, in order to keep me in my right frame of mind, my guys that I sponsor give me a gift, simple gift, to remind me who I am at all times. And for Christmas, I got these great socks. You can't see them, but this one says right. They know me. Those are the kind of guys I like to hang out with, you know. They think you need government clearance to read the classified section. Well, that's the way they are. I took a guy the other day to pick up some trophies for the bowling team, and we went in the trophy shop, and he looked around, and he said, "Boy, is this guy good." I mean, is that heavy or what? You know, this is the owner's manual if you're going to stay in AA. This is called the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you can hear a lot of stuff, but if it's not in this book, it's not AA. You know, it's real simple. My guys and I can even read this. Well, to each other even. But it says in here when the alcoholic drinks, something happens. I mean, is that really deep? So what happens if you're alcoholic and you drink? Something. I mean, today you can go into a bookstore and see reams and reams of literature on this disease written by people who have gotten well and gone out and drank again. And the reality is that the book is so simple. Something happens. I want to give Bill a call. Hello. You can't get Lois off that line. But when I drank, something always happened. And I'd like to tell you about it. But most of the things I remember most vividly never happened. Well, you guys are like that too, huh? In AA, we call those stories milk in a mouth, you know. You should have been there. I'll tell you, getting through school totally unscarred has some advantages. Nobody expects anything, you know, they just don't expect you to say brilliant things. But this book says when the alcoholic drinks, something happens. And as I said, I can attest to that. Because I would go into a bar to have that infamous one drink. Did you ever stop just to have one drink? No. You don't look like that kind of a crowd. You look like a last call crowd. Sure, honey, I'm on the way. You can bet the ranch. You know? But I'd walk into a bar and it would be like a nice setting. I'm from New York initially. And I'd go into a nice bar, neighborhood bar, nice friendly people. And I'd sit down and order one drink. And I'd look down the end of the bar and there would be a guy there. And he looked to me like a nice guy. Just a nice guy with a kind face. And I'd look down the other end of the bar and there'd be some gal there with some fresh stitches, a heavy scar tissue. Like, ooh, ooh, ooh. And then I'd have maybe a second drink. And somewhere in the course of the night, I'm punching out the guy with the nice face because he's coming on to the ugly broad who is now my date, you know? So I understand that something happens, you know? Does it ever? I'm the youngest of seven kids. And my mom used to say, you know, I don't know about the hereditary part of the disease, but my family, we were divided into two groups. Either you're in AA or you need it. You know? There's no confusion in that area. My mom used to say the only time you kids ever said no to a drink is if you misunderstood the question. You know? And then my mom, having raised me, she used to look at me and say, drunk or sober, you are no day at the beach. You know, like that. Because I, thank God, you don't have to have a good mind to get sober. You know, thank God. Because what I had going on up here used to scare me, and I was here all the time, you know. I mean, I hear people say, well, I used to wonder about this and that, and they had these big intellectual and philosophical thoughts. And I used to think about things like, if your knees bent the other way, what would chairs look like, you know? The heaviest I ever got was a thermos. I used to say, you know, you put soda in there, it stays cold. You put coffee in there, it stays hot. How does it know? You know? And it always sounded good when I was thinking about it, but when it came out, it was entirely different. I remember when Kennedy was running for president, I was in a bar and a guy said to me, Ken, who are you voting for? And I said, John F. Kennedy. And he said, I know why you're voting for him. I said, why? He said, because he's Irish Catholic. I said, no, asshole, I'm voting for him because I'm Irish Catholic. You know? And you know, it sounds good when it's up there. And people used to put a lot of pressure on me when I was drinking. You know, like, you'd fly into an airport and you'd be drinking on the plane and you'd be wiped. And some guy would be following you in his car about 10 miles an hour trying to get your parking space. And you can't even remember if you're in the right airport, you know, like, you can't find your car. And then you're telling this guy, buzz off, wait, I got no pressure, I'm trying to find my car. And so you get a glimpse of the brighter world of drinking. I used to have things that I thought were funny that nobody else thought was funny. Did that ever happen to you? I do things like, you know, pull up to the toll booth at the Holland Tunnel and say, I'll have a large fry, a hamburger. And the guy would say, mister, we don't have any food here. I'd say, well, you better get some. The line's really backing up. So you can see my mom was right. And I had that capacity of being right in the middle of a bad idea and I'd get a worse one, you know? My brothers used to call me and say, let's go get a couple of beers and get arrested. And we would do dingy things that seemed funny at the time. And one night we were there and we were in Coney Island and I got onto the little place where they play miniature golf and I snuck into the windmill. And I'm in there with a pint of Four Roses. And every time the ball came in, I threw it back. So my brothers were cracked up with this. I was in there throwing a bat. Nobody could get through the windmill. Beginning to look like the freeway, you know. So finally they have these guys, police they call them, and they, no sense of humor. I never figured out why they called them New York's finest. They never seemed that fine to me. So they came and anyway, I had to get out of this thing and try to hold on to the booze, make a long story short. The cop was right on top of me right there and he tripped and I could have run away from him because, you know, those cops train on donuts. And, so I could have run, but he tripped and fell, and as the windmill came around, it hit his hat and put it sideways. Well, I always enjoy a good laugh, so I started to laugh. I was laughing so hard, I couldn't run. Did you ever try to run and laugh? And it was like, And my brother hung out with me because he didn't want me to take the fall alone. And so the next day we're there and he says, whatever you do, Ken, I know you. Don't make this worse. He said, we got enough money to pay it. We can pay the fine and we'll be let go and we can go home. So he pleaded guilty. You guys are quick. And in addition to the fine, the cop, I think he took his uniform and put it through a shredder because now he wanted us to pay for a new uniform because he tore his pants. It looked like Fawn Hall got hold of it, you know, like it was all tore up. And so the judge said, how you plead? And I said, I'm not going to plead guilty. He said, well, isn't this the policeman who chased you? I said, I don't know, Your Honor. He says, well, how can you be sure? I said, can you have him get down on the floor and put his hand up? You see, in AA, you can relate to that. Kings County Court, they don't relate to that. Let me tell you that. So I had a series of these things. I mean, just had a series of them. I went to the racetrack and was coming home and I was on the Garden State Parkway and we got off to get coffee or whatever. And when I got back on, I came up an off-ramp. And I was heading north in the southbound lanes and there's 6 lanes of traffic on each way. And they have a toll booth there. When you go through, you pay the guy a quarter and you keep going. Well, I came through the other way. You're surprised, then. He didn't even look for money. So I started over the bridge, and I was going real slow because I didn't want to draw any attention. I knew I'd been drinking a wee bit. And as I got to the other side of the bridge, it was like my first spiritual experience. There were all these lights. And I heard a voice come out of the night saying, Buick, pull to the side of the road. You know? And so I thought, well, you know, if they've gone to this much, I might as well pull over. And so I did. And in order to be a trooper in New Jersey, at that time you had to be 6 foot, 185 pounds. And I'm a little over 6'1", and at that time I weighed about 210, and when I got out of the car, I remember saying to this trooper, if you weren't the biggest trooper I've ever seen, I'd smack you. And he'd say, pal, if you get off your knees, I won't look that big, you know, like that. Well, so I had what they call incidents of drinking, you know, those incidents. And then my wife, God love her, she was pre-Al-Anon at that time, and she would come up with these wild things. I remember saying things like, you know, that's your second drink. And I'd say, honey, don't worry about me, just finish your breakfast, you know, like a... And so when I arrived in AA, it was like not by accident, you know. And I came in back on the East Coast, and I walked into my first meeting. It was July 5th of 1970. And through God's loving grace and folks just like yourself in AA meetings all over this country and the world, and good fellowship and sponsorship, I'm sober today. And you know, there's no doubt about that. I hear folks share things like, everything that every alcoholic says, I either have said or I will say sometime. You know, so it's not like I'm talking up here. But people used to say, and I used to say it too, the reason I don't want to drink today is because I don't want to go back to the way it was. But I don't say that anymore. I say today, I don't want to drink anymore because this life, right now, is the very best I've ever had it. This is the very best for me. You know? I have no idea what goes on anywhere else, but I know when I get up in the morning, you know, as soon as my alarm goes off, I get up. Is that brilliant? At one time, I had 4 years in a state institution, and I used to read a lot, because I had a lot of time. And I read that 97% of the people who die laying down. So when my alarm goes off, I get up. And as soon as you're up, you want to go screw something up because you don't want to lose your skills. You know? And I have this book that I use. That's my owner's manual. And when I got sober, they gave me one of these. And I never had an owner's manual before. So a lot of the questions that came up in my life, I just didn't know. And there's part of this book, Bill's Story, where he talks about not the mind thing. And he says, surely this must be the answer, self-knowledge. And then the very next sentence starts out, but it was not. So many folks come in here and they're trying to get it. You already got it. You're trying to get rid of it, you know? Like people come in here trying to understand everything. And the book says, God will disclose more to us. He's not going to disclose everything. It would scare you. I mean, I love people who stand up at me and say, well, you know, Ken, I'm 2 years sober. And I don't understand God. I say, hey, it took you 2 years to figure out how to record a program on your VCR. And you want a meaningful relationship with God. Don't worry, he knows what you're working with. He gave it to you. And did you ever notice that the folks who were just doing the work, the guys that you saw today, selling the raffle tickets, taking the registration, making the coffee, they're the folks who look like this. They're happy, joyous, and free. Not unhappy, miserable, and tentative. You know, like, they're happy, joyous, and free because they have absolutely no idea what this is all about, but they know they don't have to know. They just have to do. And in the doing, they get to know. And it's the simplest thing, and it goes right by 90% of the people who come here because they're so busy, their mind is like, well, I'm going to think of a logical conclusion. An alcoholic thinking is like going into a bad neighborhood. You know, you just don't want to go there alone, you know. Like I always tell guys, did you ever notice that every problem you ever present to me starts with three words, I've been thinking. When's the last time you heard anyone say, I just finished an hour of prayer and meditation and quiet, and I am deep duty, you know? No. Thinking. You know, that's the last three words you want to hear an alcoholic say is, I've been thinking. We got those kind of minds, we can take any solution and turn it into a problem. You know? We scratch stuff that just don't itch. You know? Alcoholic goes to a wedding, wants to be the bride. You know? He goes to a funeral, he wants to be the corpse. And he wants to do it humbly. You know? Watching an alcoholic think is like trying to watch somebody circle one wagon. You know? And the idea is, go faster. I mean, it's amazing. I love it. And that's why I love the program, because a little bozo like me can come here, can just do what's suggested in this big book, not read anything additional into it, take a series of actions, and start to have a very, very happy life. And you know, sometimes people say, well, you can't be happy all the time. Don't you love it? And I'm not saying there aren't events that won't make you sad, but you don't have to become the event, you know? You watch some people, you feel like they missed their calling. They should have been hemorrhoids. I don't know. We have t-shirts in my group that say on the front, be a verb. You know, I've got too many nouns in AA. Be a verb. Go do something. And on the back it says, leap before you look. You know? Don't you love the people who are always changing? No, I'm talking about change. I need to change. I inventory change. Went over to my sponsor's house several times and talked about change. I speak at every meeting I go to about change. And it's like watching someone in baseball who wants to steal second, but they don't want to leave first. You know? And if you want to get to second, you got to leave first. And that means sometimes looking a little awkward. You may have a catcher with a good arm. Maybe the IRS. You're halfway down the second, you say, oh God, maybe I should have stayed. But you don't know if you don't go, you know? So leap before you look. By the time you figured it out, you could have tried it 50 times. And what's the worst that can happen is it doesn't work. That's the very worst that can happen. It doesn't work. I mean, we're living in a world where the air we breathe is polluted. The water is polluted, the food is full of carcinogens, and we have people who are worried about making a mistake. Any day they're going to get a 500-pound halibut with four eyes out of the Hudson River. You're going to say, I want to see somebody from Dow Chemical right now. And I don't listen to the news. I figure that, you know, that's made up stuff. I don't listen to the news. A lot of people like to listen to the news and then talk about it forever. Now, I'm not putting down anybody or anything. If you want to do it, you go ahead and do it. I just don't need that in my life. I need real things in my life. I need the great reality. I need spiritual growth. I don't need all that nonsense. I had gotten back from a trip the other night when the president was speaking, and some guy called and said, are you listening to the president? I said, why should I? Michael Jordan and the Bulls are playing San Antonio. If I got a choice between Bush and Jordan, I know who's winning. He said, why are you doing that? I said, because if I watch something for 2 hours at the end of it, I want to know the score. The Bulls lost in a heartbeat, by the way. But that's what it's about for me. It's about getting up and living life. The book talks about the great reality. Deep down inside each one of us is the great reality. And you know, I used to think there was something very mystical out there that you had to pursue in order to be happy, joyous, and free. And when you come in, I think when anybody comes in, you're seeking and you need a visible means of support. In California, where I live, they talk about career choice. What's your career choice? When I got sober in New York, they used to say, hey, yo, get a job. Get off the street. Make your mother proud. Try to do something that's not indictable, you know? I mean, when I came to AA, it meant a career change, because when I was drinking, I used to find things before people officially lost them. You know? When they start talking about rigorous honesty, I had a cold chill in my back, you know? But I came into this meeting, and the thing that happened to me right away, and maybe it doesn't happen to you. Some people say it doesn't happen to them. But right away what happened was I went to a meeting, and when I got there, they had greeters at the door. You didn't get into a meeting at that time without someone greeting you at the door. And when I came in on July 5th of 70 in a city where it was very humid and hot, and I was wearing a blue wool suit, they kind of suspected I was a newcomer. So they said, newcomer. I said, yeah. They said, what's your name? I said, Ken. I knew that because it was on my license. So they gave me a little red tag, had Ken on it. And they said, Ken, go sit down front because that's where the miracle takes place. So I wanted to be close to the miracle. So I came up front and I sat down, and I don't know who shared or what they said. It was a group of guys in New York at that time. They had meetings that where you'd go out to speak at somebody else's meetings. And the meeting started at 9 and ended at 10. No soul saved after 10. And when it was over, this guy came up to me and he said, I perceive you're a newcomer. I said, yes. He said, well, why don't you let me be your temporary sponsor until you get your feet under you here, and then you can do what you want. And I didn't even know what he was talking about, so I said, sure. Well, I celebrated 21 years this past July, and he's still my temporary sponsor. I don't know if it's going to work, you know. But he seems to need the action, you know. And the thing that he did for me, as I perceive it today, was, and this is just my own way of describing it, is somehow and during the course of my life, I don't know when it happened, I don't know how it happened, and today I don't deem either one of those important. But my spiritual light went out. My spiritual light just flickered and it went out. And I was living a life I didn't want to live, but I didn't seem to have any power to correct it. And what my sponsor did was, he had a spiritual candle which was his own, and it was lit. And with his spiritual candle, he came and he lit my spiritual candle. And once he lit it, it was now my light. It was no longer his light. And now it was up to me to keep it lit and pass it on. And he used to say, you know, if the light is kept lit, and my light is kept lit, and your light is kept lit, people don't stumble when the path is well lit. And sponsorship is nothing more, you know, you take the word sponsor, it's a sober person offering a newcomer suggestions on recovery. And that's all it is. And that's what the sponsor does. He offers the newcomer suggestions on recovery. And we have a book that talks about questions and answers for sponsors. And when people say to me, Ken, do you have to be happy? I'll say, you know, there's only two things that they recommend in that book to get a sponsor. One is that sponsor have at least a year sober. Not necessary, but they recommend it. And the second thing is try to get a sponsor who looks like they're enjoying their sobriety. You know? Now that's not... I say that, but that's not me saying it. It's in that little pamphlet. And those are the really only basic requirements you need. If you're going to be here, you might as well be happy. There's a lot to be happy about. And most folks are so busy trying to figure out what happened 20 years ago that they lose track of today. And before you know it, today is gone. Now, I don't believe that there's any there and then. People talk about there and then. To me, there's only here and now. And when you get to there and then, it's here and now. So why worry about there and then till it's here and now? You know? We don't seem to have any trouble with that in my group. You know, the big book makes it real clear. I wouldn't argue with anyone because I stopped fighting everyone and everything. I don't have time for that. But the big book makes it real clear to me that I can only meet God in the now. And if I spend my time worrying about yesterday and tomorrow, I miss that opportunity today. And the book says it real clear. There is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him. You guys are unbelievable. And if you take the word now and spell it backwards, it's one. When you've learned to live in the now, you've won. W-O-N, N-O-W. You know, it's real, real simple. And this is not about what may happen or what did happen. This is about what's going on right now. And I watch folks waste a lot of time, but I have no argument with that because some people seem to have to do that. And I realize that God leaves different wake-up calls for all of us. You know? And some folks just never get there. They disconnect. It's like, And they're going to read books about how to do it. Some people think you make a reputation in AA talking about what you're going to do. No, you make a reputation about what you do. You know, people are watching you all the time. It's how you live your life. And, you know, I like to have, this is great. I love to come out and watch people laugh and have fun like you guys do. I love to watch that. But really, someone said to me the other day, supposing, Ken, no one ever called you to go speak again anywhere. I said, you know what? I'd still be the very best thing you can be in AA, and that is a sober member. You know? And I have a home group, and I have a sponsor, and I sponsor, and so I have a program. I don't have some slapstick thing. I have the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So if it happened that people got tired of listening to me like I do, then it would be a deal where you just say, hey, I could go on and do these other things. And a lot of folks get hung up about who we are. It doesn't matter who you are. It's about what you do. If you're going to spend your whole life trying to figure out who you are, you're going to have a lot of time wasted. You know? I thought my first spiritual experience was a solid bowel movement. You know? Came at about 3 months sober, right after I got my 90-day token. I said, oh my God, that must be the spiritual experience they're talking about. I mean, had my wife been with me, I would have called her in. Come on. But people are looking for these giant intellectual answers, and life is very, very simple. It's about living it. And in the living it, you get whatever answer you're meant to get. And it's not about just into thinking. I don't want to ruin anybody's day, but thinking is what you do when you don't want to take action. You can think about something forever. It doesn't change it. It's not until you take an action. It's real simple. And if you look up the word courage, people talk about the courage to change the things we can. The original root word courage comes from the heart. When you start to set aside your mind and live from your heart, then good things happen. Talks about that. It says you have to have a transformation of heart. Transformation of heart. Even though when he's getting the best medical attention, he needs a transformation of heart. We have an 11th step, and I don't care who you are or where you are in sobriety, there will come a time in your life when your logic will fail. You just cannot come up with a logical answer. And at that point, you're either going to have a breakdown, and that doesn't mean you'll go out and drink, but you'll just break down in sobriety, depression and all this other stuff. Or you'll connect with God as you understand Him and have a breakthrough. And that's what that 11th step is all about, prayer and meditation. And the whole purpose of the step, is to help me remember what I have forgotten. And what I have forgotten is, there is one who has all power. Now, sometimes during the course of days, I get mugged by life just like other people. And when I get mugged, I lose track of who has all the power. Sometimes I even think I might have a little. Remember what my mom said. But I still get these ideas, you know, like they come into my head, how to make money. You know, let's have liver on a stick. Or, you know, or maybe sell hearing aids over the telephone. You know, like, well, see, that's what goes on up here. So I need to get to a meeting and hang out with the boys. And the reality for me is that as I have gotten to that 11th step over and over and over again, it helps me remember. And we had a fellow down in our area, Chuck C., who's passed away now. And he used to talk about this whole thing as being perception. It's not about what really is happening. It's how I perceive what's really happening. And he used to say, when you're truly in a spiritual sense of well-being, you will develop a new pair of glasses. Nothing will change. You will just see it for the first time like you've never seen it before. Well, sometimes during the day, folks, I forget where I put the glasses. And that's why I need the 11th step, because the 11th step reminds me the glasses are always available if I but take the steps from that spiritual tool kit that we get given here, and I start to grow again. And it's not about thinking. Heaven forbid. Now, I'm not saying put down education. You know, you need to make change at the store and stuff. You know. Just don't let it overflow into what's real, you know. Life. And for me, it's been a process of getting spiritually well right from the get-go. Right from the get-go. And I get confused just like everybody else on a given day. And that's why I have to stay connected to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and people who know me well enough to say, maybe you're doing this or you're doing that.
And I have a home group. It was talked about today. I have a home group. And I belong. And it's not like I'm some outsider who just whizzes through once in a while. I have a group that I'm connected with. And I do those basic things that we talk about here. And I love it. I love going, I remember going on 12-step calls with my sponsor. He used to let me sit in the corner and watch him do his magic. You know? Do you ever go on one with your sponsor where they ring the doorbell and some pre-Al-Anoner answers the door? And she always says the same thing. Are you from AA? And you say, yes, we're from AA. And she says, it's upstairs. And it's like, you got to chuckle because you can't wait to see it. You know, like, ooh, he sure does look like one of us, you know? He's on the good roll right now, you know? Alcoholics never get here on a winning streak. And you see him right at the end of the street, you know? They kind of have that look like a cat on the freeway. And they have no idea what's going on, and yet they pretend. Yeah, I'm okay. I'm doing good. You know, it looked like Michael Spinks right after the other guy got done with him. Yeah, I'm doing okay. All I need is a brain right now. You know? But most alcoholics are like fighters, you know, and it looked like they should have stopped the fight 3 rounds earlier. You know, that's the way they look. And my sponsor used to sit in the corner, and I'd sit in the corner, and he'd sit next to the bed, and the bed would be rattling, and the guy would be rattling. And he'd start telling the guy about AA and a little bit about himself. And within a very short period of time, that bed would kind of quiet down. And the guy would start to quiet down. And you'd hear that guy say things like, yeah, I understand. Yeah, I've done that. I know that feeling. I've been there. And suddenly, the identification of one alcoholic with another was taking place. And that's the miracle of AA. It's not all the books. It's not all the philosophy. It's not all the mumbo-jumbo. It's the identification of one alcoholic with another saying, pal, I don't know where you're at, but I have a pretty good idea. And I've been in similar situations, and we have a solution, and it's a common solution, and it works. And then eventually you'd see that guy like Lazarus drive up out of the bed. Maybe not that night, maybe the next night, and come to a meeting, and he'd have a red tag, and he'd be on his way. And I got to see that over and over and over again. So there's no question in my mind whether AA works. You know, is there a better way? Don't you love it? The whole parade is going this way and you're hitchhiking the other way. And then after I was here to show you how quick I was, after I was here and got a 90-day token, I looked around the room because I got tired of people coming up and saying to me, you're a newcomer. And I looked around the room and I studied them very carefully. And I noticed everybody had a blue name tag. And I still had this red name tag. So I caught this huge resentment. And when the meeting was over, I stormed up to the secretary. I was a good stormer then. And I had that New York way about me. Hey, yo! How come I have a red name tag and everybody else has a blue name tag? And she said, oh, Ken, you're ready for a blue one. So she took off the red one, put the blue one on. You just can't sneak too much by me, you know? And today I work with a lot of guys who have a red name tag for the first year, you know? And that's okay. And that's okay. And you know, I get a chance to totally understand that my life has meaning only based upon the meaning I give it. And if I'm not waiting for someone else to give my life meaning. I give my life meaning by the actions I take. And I can start any given day to take actions to do whatever I want. And I don't have to measure it by whether or not I complete it or finish it or do it better or whatever, just the fact that I'm in the process of doing those things I want to do. There was a great Buddha story. Had to do with change. And Buddha went around and talked in all these little villages for over 40 years. And one day he was in this village and the line of people were lined up to see him. And one of the fellows walked up, and when he got up to Buddha, he slapped his face. And Buddha looked at him and said, "Is that all you got to say?" And the guy went home, and I'm sure he must have been an alcoholic. He probably inventoried and all that good stuff. And the next day he was online because he felt so guilty. Someday Hallmark is going to come out with a card that says, "Guilt, the gift that keeps on giving." You know? And he waited in line, and when he got up to Buddha, he made an amends. He said, "I owe you an amends." And Buddha said, "Why?" And he said, "Because I'm the man who slapped you yesterday." And Buddha looked at him and said, "You owe me no amends, because the man whose face you slapped no longer exists." And it's quite obvious that the man who slapped his face no longer exists. And that's what happens in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's growing spiritually and getting so comfortable with yourself that the wrongs that others do to you and about you aren't noticed the same way. Now, I'm not saying you're abused. I'm just saying your understanding of the fact that each person is doing the best they can. And sometimes their best isn't real hot. You know, but that's the best they can do. And you get a chance to watch people grow. And you get one alcoholic who's never been able to do anything in his life suddenly working with another alcoholic, and together they have no idea what they're doing, but they're doing it together, and it's keeping them sober, and they feel like they're growing. And it's a daily process. It's a daily reprieve. You know, it's not about anything else. It's getting yourself spiritually fit so you can stand in the sunlight. And once you get to stand in the sunlight of the Spirit and feel that heat, you don't want to miss it. You know, you want to spend all your time there. And that happens over a period of time. It doesn't happen in the first 10, 15, 20 days. Some people get it in 90 days. That's why we give them those pins. Did you ever meet one of those? "Oh, yeah, I know all about the big book, Ken. I've studied it." Yeah, but can you practice it? You know, can you practice it? And you get connected with everything. I used to be terribly afraid of dogs. Terribly afraid. Because at one time in my life, I was bit three different times. It always seemed that I was trying to get in someplace where these dogs didn't want you to get in. So even in sobriety, I had this terrible fear of dogs. Or I used to have this terrible fear of dogs. And about 3 years ago, I was riding down the road, and we were having a heat spell in San Diego. And it was about 105, 107 degrees, and I had the air conditioner on. And I looked in my rearview mirror, and here was a Rottweiler chasing after me. Now, do you know what a Rottweiler looks like? It's a Doberman on steroids. You know, big guy. You know, big guy. And I pulled over to the side of the road, and I put the window down, and I let him catch up. And he was next to the car, and his tongue was hanging out. And I looked at him, and I said, "What now?" And just for that moment, me and that dog were on the same wavelength. See, he knew I chased after a lot of stuff in my life, having no idea what I was going to do when I caught it. And so we were right there together. You know, they talk about the oneness in the Spirit. We were one in the Spirit. So I let him catch his breath, and I said, "Hang in there, brother. Have a good day." I said, "I think there's a VW coming here. Nail it." But you see, I get a chance to participate in life, in the fullness of life, and I don't have that great apprehension about what might happen. I'm too busy experiencing what is happening. And you know, I hear folks say things like, and I've said it myself, as I said, they say, I came to believe. And if you stop there, you haven't experienced anything. It's not until you come to experience that you know. And that's what this book says over and over again. Go and get your own experience. Share with other people. Listen to other people. Let's get input. But go and get your own experience. Even if you think you're an alcoholic or not. If you think you're not, what? Step next door. Try drinking. Social drinking. You look like a winner. And if it doesn't work out, you can just go back into that dumpster we picked you up at. But it's always about getting your own experience. You know, I grew up in the city and there was a real fast crowd. And everybody in my neighborhood who had money was called Don, respectively. And they used to say things like, money talks, but cash screams. And I was primed for AA long before I picked up the first drink because they used to say, Ken, don't worry about education. Just go and get a lot of experience. Because if you're going to be a street kid, you'll come to find out that when a man with experience meets a man with money, the guy with the experience will end up with the money. And the guy who had the money will end up with an experience. You know? So just concentrate on going and getting the experience. And don't worry about all the other nonsense. And so I was ready. Now, I understand the seriousness of the disease of alcoholism. In 1985, I had a sister who went into the hospital in October. She hemorrhaged with cirrhosis of the liver, and she died Christmas Day. And we wakened her Thursday and Friday, and we buried her Saturday. And I went back to San Diego for a New Year's function, and New Year's Day I got a call, my brother was dead. And we went back to the same funeral home, sat there, and we buried him. And then my mom died. And then I volunteered in 1983 to work in the hospice program, and that's working with people who are terminally ill. And one of the things that came out of that, you know, I have a great God. He does bank shots just to show off, you know. He leads me to believe I'm doing this. You know, this is going on over here. So I thought I wanted to take a little break from doing all this AA work, so I went and volunteered in the hospice. And I went through the training program, and they don't take you in the hospice program unless your prognosis is 6 months or less now. And I went out to see this guy, first guy I ever worked with. And he was real angry, 71 years old, and he had cancer. And he was a real angry guy, and I said, why don't you share that anger with me? And he said, you wouldn't understand. And I said, well, why don't you give me a shot? And he said, okay, I'm 39 years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, and I should have gotten a cake 2 months ago, and I'm so weak I can't go to the meetings. And so I said, wow, that's what I say at group level. That's not what I said. I said, no, kidding. I said, Stanley, I'm 13 years sober. And he said, wow, no kidding. And he was on liquid morphine then, so I said, load up on that stuff, Stanley, and I'll take you to a meeting. So I took him to a meeting. And he got up, and he talked about how happy he was to be at an AA meeting, and how good life was for him and had been for him as a sober member of AA. And that's what he talked about. And he went home. And as I said, my God has a great sense of humor. And so Stanley lived another whole year. And I got to give him a 40-year cake and took him back to a meeting. And he's one of the guys, along with Scribble and Tex, who started the hole-in-the-wall meeting. So he was one of those guys just there, and just a real super, super guy. Now, I have guys who call me on the phone, whimpers and whiners. Ken, she's leaving. Ken, I lost my job. I said, come on over. We'll spend some time together, but this is my commitment to this guy. We got to go down and visit him. So I take him down to Stanley. And Stanley was laying down, and he had had a colostomy, and he had tubes coming in and out of him. He was on oxygen, and I'd go in there with this bozo, and I'd say, Stanley, guy's having problems with the program. I mean, it was like instant hit for Stanley. He'd whip off that oxygen mask, and he'd say, wow, are we lucky, sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous, we're happy, joyous, and free, living in San Diego, is life beautiful, until the oxygen ran out. And so we'd stay and visit with him for a half hour or so, and then we'd leave and get out in the hall, and I'd say to Bozo, now tell me about your problems. And you know, on pages 132 and 133 of this big book is the heart of it for a lot of people that I work with and for me. It says God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. God doesn't make my misery, never did. I make it. It's how I perceive stuff. And then I act on it as though it's real when it's not real in the first place. And then I can get it into looking almost any way I want, depending on where I'm at the time. And depending on how much energy I have. I just... You better leave me alone for a while. You know? And that is such a waste. But I know that there are some folks that have to do that for a while. Hopefully you grow out of it. Hopefully you get to the point where you say, you know, everybody else seems to be marching to a different tune. And I'm trying to create my own, you know, I'm carrying a piano in a marching band. You know? This is not what it's all about. And you get connected with people who are marching to the same tune you are. You know, we go to meetings in large numbers, and we go to dinner, and if you're a new guy and you come in, you just get caught up in the swell of it. It's like, you know, we got to make coffee. We got to do these things. You know, they say in AA there are no big deals, and that's true, but there are big commitments. You had people today that talked about making a commitment to a home group, making a commitment to intergroup, making a commitment to a GSR, making a commitment. This thing doesn't just go on by its own weight. There are people who make it move. And the people who make it move are not out in the spotlight all the time. They're folks you names you never even know. There are some people in my group you wouldn't know them unless you went to that group on a regular basis. They do the basic things. They're not about getting up in front of a lot of people. That's just not who they are. But they have a definite place here. And God knows we need those people. It takes all of us to make one of us. And sometimes we lose that in the transmission. So stay connected. I know that there's a 13-step dance, so I won't run over. So you can start to strap on your wacko magnets now. You know, like that. You wouldn't want one to get away. Down in our area, there, they have these dancers. I mean, these gals put on these trolling outfits. I mean, it's unbelievable. Hey, the guys do the same thing, you know. I got sober in New York, and they used to say, this is a two-fold disease, whiskey glasses and women's asses. And I know it is from the other side, too, you know. I get a chance to go to weddings where the only thing they have in common is neither one of them were raised by wolves. You know, like, I mean... But I'm real happy that you gave me an opportunity to come up here and share with you. And I love to listen to you laugh because I know some things about laughter that most people don't know. And one of them is that laughter is the greatest spiritual healing in the world. It's the greatest. There's nothing that's comparable to it. And the fact is they rate it right up there now with sex and jogging. They really do. If you are laughing... You are producing endorphins, which are very, very, very good for your body. They're good to fight pain and all kinds of things. The other thing I know, which is a blessing for alcoholics, is you cannot laugh and think at the same time. So every time you catch a giggle, you're getting a respite from you. If there were a song for AA, it would be, I'm always on my mind. I came in this afternoon when, what was it, Guns N' Roses was here, and Midnight Rose, and they were playing that great whiskey music, you know? And I was thinking of those songs they used to play when I was drinking, like, I'm just 2 six-packs away from loving you, you know? Like, throw a saddle on the stove, Mama. I'm riding the range tonight, you know? And my personal favorite, I used to kiss her on the lips, but it's all over now, you know? There was a little guy who used to come in and out of my house 2 short years ago. He was from Pune, India. His name was Harish. And Harish was a very special friend of mine. He was a very gentle man. And whenever he entered my home, he would put his hands together, and he would bow his head, and he would say, Namaste, Ken. And when he left, he would say, Namaste, Ken. And I asked him what that meant. And he said, it means the God in me recognizes the God in you. And as long as the God in me recognizes the God in you, we won't hurt one another. We may disagree on the surface. There may be some things I said that upset you. You probably heard incorrectly. There are some people who like the laughter. There are some people who don't want any laughter right now. But that's just the way it is, you know. But the main thing is that at this level, when we can take all the trash that people have put in our way and get it out of the way, we are all God's kids and we all swim in the same water here. And our job is not to pollute it. You know, and it's to be about being good to one another and being supportive of one another, even if we don't quite understand what you're doing. And trying to encourage you to go out and get your own experience, because that's what you're here for. And you come to the realization at some point, hopefully, that life is all a joke and we're the punchline. You know, God is up there going, you can't believe what they're doing now. When I was a kid, we got a chance to go to the Statue of Liberty, and we were only like 4th or 5th grade. And the teacher knew that the Statue of Liberty was dark and it was damp, and it was terrorizing for a kid in a way. And so, knowing that, she had us all join hands. And as we went through and we felt the fear of the journey, we had the courage to stay there because we were connected with a classmate, one on each hand. And we didn't want to let go and go back because it meant we had to disconnect from the people who were holding on to us and counting on us, and we'd have to walk by all the other folks who were following us. And so we went through the dark spots, and we gained courage and experience from it by being joined with one another. And that's exactly what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. We put one hand in God, one hand in the other hand of another alcoholic, and we just don't have any hands left to pick up a drink. And it's real, real simple. I hope I didn't confuse it for you. But if I did, I have some red stickers. As I said, in 85 and 86, in an 18-month period, I went to the cemetery 11 times, and I buried some real, real nice people who were very close to me. And something happened to me as a result of that, that I'll never be the same again. Never. I've been with people at that moment when they are passing over, and they're fighting for their last breath. And you come to find out how very fragile this thing called life is and how very, very important it is. And on each trip to the cemetery, the thing that became painfully clear to me was that each headstone was exactly alike. It had the name of the person, when they were born, a dash, and then when they died. And the dash was never more than 4 or 5 inches long. And that dash, folks, is life. And I don't know where you are, but I'm along in the dash. And I just don't have time to be upset with people. And I just don't have time to be resentful of anyone. And I sure as hell don't want to try to figure out why or how I'm different from anyone. I want to stay in the water with everybody and swim the same way. I want to splash the same way. People say to me, Ken, life is so deep. And I always say, come down the shallow end with me and the kids. First thing you'll notice is the water's warmer. And the second thing you'll notice is if you get tired of treading, you just stand up. You know? It's not real complicated. I want to thank all of you for letting me be here tonight. I want to thank God for the sobriety I've come to enjoy, and I enjoy every day, one day at a time. I want to thank all the folks who made this a real, real nice day to me. And I also want to tell you, if you want to be real, real gentle with one another and real, real good to one another, because we're only on loan here. And on the way home tonight, allow yourself the opportunity to thank God for your sobriety today. Just this day. Thank Him. Just say thanks, God. And open the door for yourself to grow spiritually. And remember that no matter what happens, good or bad, we'll be here if you want to come back anytime, anywhere, under any condition. We love you. We want you here. This is your place. This is home. This is where you come. Namaste. God bless you.